Good morning, people of planet Earth. It is me, your host, Hacker Mike. And I'm going for my morning walk. I'd like to take you with me on a little chat, a little fireside chat, where we discuss whatever's going through my mind, whatever's going on, the stream of random. I hope that we'll cover some topics that you're interested in, and I'm interested in. And I've discovered editing. I know I promised I would never edit, and never take the time to do it, but I'm also evolving, because I realized that by editing, even just a little bit, even spending a minute of time, I can cut out some of the cars, some of the loud noises. I can apply the compressor and the volume normalizer, the silence eliminator, and little things like that that might help us along. If you listen to yesterday's episode, I stopped editing in the middle. I mean, I'm just learning how to edit in Audacity. Hold on. For example, that was a ear scratch that I'm going to cut out. So I don't need to leave everything in. I can just look for peaks. I can say, cut! Cut! Anyhow. Any hoosies. We are back in New Jersey. Back on our normal routine with a large city to walk through that goes on for whiles and whiles, a long time. A suburbia known as Trenton and the surrounding area. Great little city. It kind of gives you the best of all the worlds. And it's funny because when I lived in Frankfurt, I lived at the train station, and everyone's like, oh, it's so horrible there. But I liked it. And it wasn't as dangerous as people say. You just don't borrow money from loan sharks and other bad things. You know, don't get involved in that business. And you have less bad things happen to you. Like my neighbor had one of his prostitutes murdered because he owed money. I used to see them standing out by the train station, and they lived across the street from me. This was back in the early 90s, and they must have been in their late 40s. I think the one was his girlfriend. So he owed someone money, and they offed her, which was not a very nice thing to do. Stabbed her, I heard. They had the whole place taped off. I'm just looking out my window like, what's going on over there? Why are the police there? I mean, that type of stuff happened once in a while. That's good coffee. But we don't want to start with nasty stuff like that. I'm just saying that. Up in upstate New York, in Pennsylvania, you could also just get killed by a drunken driver. There's like DUI signs everywhere for some reason. And people driving these humongous pickup trucks. That's also dangerous, especially if it's icy roads and no place to walk, no sidewalks. So what's more dangerous? Oh, everything's relative, right? So, you could say walking around at nighttime is also dangerous, going for your morning walk at 4:30 in the morning, 4:50, I think it's 5 o'clock. Well, listen, it's also dangerous not to sit on your butt all day long and not move around. That's also dangerous. So what's more dangerous? Anyway, on a more positive note, it's a beautiful day. I don't need gloves. I got a psychedelic rainbow cow here. It's a reindeer with Christmas tree lights in it. Oh my God. I should take a picture of that. Got some pretty garish Christmas tree decorations going on here. An inflatable reindeer. I should actually take a picture of this for our show. Yeah, so we start our show normally. Oh my God. That's some crazy stuff right there. We start our show normally with a little chit-chat like this. Get ourselves warmed up. Get the juices flowing. And then we kind of kick off onto some ideas. Well, yesterday I listened to Duncan Trussell's Family Hour. And I remember listening to Duncan Trussell on Joe Rogan Experience, and I should clip some of his good stuff. I have clips on our Telegram channel that I just clipped off the TV with my phone while watching it. And he got dressed up like a swamp thing. He had these different outfits that were pretty hilarious. And I was just thinking about podcasting 2.0. Oh my God, I gotta get my mind focused here. So him and Joe are talking about all these different alien things and I guess different trippy experiences. And I remember thinking, they're describing the fungus. You know when you have that conspiracy theory mindset and you see everything from that viewpoint? That's what's great if you think of your own conspiracy theory. Then you have your own personal thing that you can prove everything with. It's like, oh, you're missing some proof for some crazy idea? Well, just insert your own little conspiracy theory right here. Look at that. It fits. Well, so I started listening to Duncan on his own show. And I don't listen all the time. Sometimes I was put off by him. But yesterday, he was shining. He was talking to Jason Loew. And Jason talked about a lot of things that I can relate with. And then he was like, oh yeah, I'm going to actually insert the clips into this show. So, insert clip two here. He's talking about 1984 and how they have these TVs going all the time in George Orwell's books. And that meditation is a way to turn that TV off. And he's going to segue into meditation now.
Constant they have the constant TVs everywhere that are constantly blaring party propaganda, and you can't shut them off. And then there's the one scene where he meets O'Brien, the head of the party, who can shut his TV off, because only the inner party is allowed to turn off their TVs, but only for about a half an hour at a time.
That's it.
That's a good meditation session. So, yeah. So that, I think, and what that allows you to do, just achieve mental silence. I'm not like one of these guys that it's like, look, the magic, the occult, spirituality, there's so much fucking horseshit in it. I'll be the first person to tell you that. It is gibberish. It's fucking gibberish, right? But there's really useful things in there too. And so much of my career has been trying to locate the things that are actually helpful, dust them off, and represent them in a way that, because those things are the most critical things. Like, for instance, the ability to achieve mental silence, right? Like, that right there is the difference between a successful and an unsuccessful life. And it's very hard. It requires constant practice, just like going to the gym. It's hard, and people are like, oh, it's hard. It's like, yeah, it's fucking hard. Yes, it is fucking hard. Like, go get to it. You know, it's like, I don't want to become like the Jocko Willink of fucking meditation or something like that. But it's like, it requires work. It's not, it doesn't come from some intrinsic spiritual genius or whatever, yeah. Except when it does. But I think that what that allows us to do is the most critical thing right now. You said, where are you getting your news? You got to check in with yourself. You have to be able to feel your own humanity, your own body, your own connection to what's around you. It's like the classic Bill Hicks joke, where he's saying, it's like, you know, you turn on the news and it's like, war, AIDS, death, famine, recession, war, AIDS, death, famine, recession. And then you look out the window and like, there's a bird chirping. You're like, what the fuck is this all happening? You know? It's like, well, it is happening if you're in LA, but you know, if you're in Austin, it's pretty chill. But
it's not happening all the time. I mean, that's the thing, is it's like, it doesn't even happen. It's not just shutting off your mind. It's like acknowledging the impermanence of whatever the particular states of consciousness are, because the other thing these mimetic fucks do, whatever you want to call them, these counter sorcerers or tyrants or whatever, AI fucking wizards, whatever, whatever they try to do, is they try to give everyone a sense of some permanence. And which is why these elections that are happening, they're so stupid at this point, because every single election, it's the end of the world if the other person gets elected. And it's been that way for a while. And like, this is just not the case. And it's enforcing a way of looking at things. So, not to go back to my savior, Jesus, but whoever wrote "Offer unto Caesar what is Caesar's," to me, this isn't pay your taxes. It's saying, number one, figure out what is Caesar's. Where's the meme? And then whatever that fucking stupid thing is, yeah, use that as tokens in this phantasmal game. But also know there's some things that aren't mimetic. There's some things that aren't injected in you from this world. And those are the things. That's where I find all my power. That's where I have a sense of like glee and joy in the world in the midst of all this, which in a joy that isn't delusion, a joy that isn't based on me turning my back on the wild suffering of things. I mean,
he's talking about meditating and finding your inner peace, like find your inner safe space. And then he goes off and talks about this AI idea, that AI could be the cause of the Great Reset. It's like, oh, we don't need all these people now. How do we sideline them? Oh yeah, we'll just use this virus.
It's used. So my concern is not COVID. My concern is, what is COVID being used as a pretext for? Case in point, 9/11, right? Like, everyone obsesses over 9/11 truth. All this, who really did 9/11? My response is, who gives a shit, right? I mean, not totally, but it's like, we know it happened. It's not the event, it's how it was used. We know for a fact that 9/11 was used as a pretext for the Patriot Act. It was used as a pretext for every American citizen to be sexually molested every time they fly, which doesn't, if you don't think that has a deep psychological effect, think again, you know, and that never went away. Just like all the COVID stuff will never go away. It's, what's it a pretext for? And it's the same with COVID. What is COVID being used as a pretext for? It's always, people are afraid, they always surrender power, and the power never comes back, ever, right? So if I was to look at COVID cynically, I would say this. We've known for quite a while, in fact, we talked about this on your podcast a couple of times back, that the AI age is coming. And everyone who is on the power curve of AI knows that AI and automation and software in general, we can just say technology in general, yeah, invalidates the need for a lot of human labor.
Yes.
Right. And therefore, we're going to end up with the majority of the population being no longer necessary or falling into the category, at least to the powers that be, because everyone is essential. Now they're saying, you're not an essential worker, right? That means we don't need you. But everyone is essential, right? In the spiritual sense, to each other, in the family sense, in the just being a human sense, right?
Yeah.
But from the technocratic, the technocrat viewpoint, well, they're not necessary to greasing the wheels unless they're buying the stuff we're making, right? But they're not needed as workers. So therefore they fall into the category of what the Nazis used to refer to as useless eaters. That was their name for it.
Whoa.
And so, you know, like the, and this is nothing new. I mean, like if you look at the Fabian Society, which was a socialist think tank in Britain, and the same people that Orwell was responding to, people like Margaret Sanger and things like this, they were talking about the need for eugenics and annihilating.
Now that's a good that's a good conspiracy theory, a good idea. It's similar to the one that I said recently, that it's the financial system that's produced all this excess ritualization. But it could be really that the reason why they have so much ritualization is because of the AI. Now, I haven't ever considered that. And this could be the next Moore's Law. Is there a Moore's Law of machine learning? That the machine learning will get more and more powerful, will double its power over time, like some fungus growing, some bacteria? And is not this growth, this exponential growth, just the growth of fungus spores and sugar that's consuming everything? Is it the fungus that's eating your lunch? So yeah, we got some good stuff going on there. Now my phone's beeping. We're going to wait for Chicken Jar, who's going to join us today. So I have to check these beeps and make sure that we are ready when he calls. Well, let's see if we got added to an awesome podcast list. Oh, it's more personal, political than developer focused. Oh, I see. We're political now. So they've got, it's clearly political. We don't talk about code. I see. So we just got censored, kids, off of the awesome podcasts. So there you go. Personal, political, then developer focused. Okay. I guess developers have to be only talking about politically correct or no politics at all, huh? Okay. Well then, I have to start my own awesome podcast list, huh? Or just fork his and put mine on it. I'll never find it. Well, I tried. Bum, bum, bum. Like, oh, how dare you think for yourself on your podcast? Okay. Well, that hurts just a little bit, you know? This rejection. But you gotta be you have to be able to stand some rejection if you're hosting a public podcast and you're trying to promote it. It's not like everyone's gonna wanna listen. And we've had our listeners go down to our court. I've got episodes that only have 2 listens. whoever they may be, God bless you. But last two episodes I've gotten a few, and I see that I gotta stick some more work into the episodes. We've produced so many, you know, why should I listen to all of them, even if I'm a listener? Why not just pick the ones that I'm interested in? Because I have so many choices. There's so many things I could listen to. And that's where biosemiotics comes in. And we got to continue talking about that. I listened to more of that talk. She's talking about choices being made. Choices being made by the organism, even in the face of randomness. So you're presented with random, with chaos, and oh, Duncan Trussell also talks about chaos. They were saying how humans cannot be predicted, that chaos, mathematics basically show that there's no predictions possible. I guess this is, they just rediscovered the halting problem. It's like, hey boys, if the other side of the program is an attacker who is actively working against you, then you have a problem, right? If it's a Turing machine, who is receiving orders somehow through inputs from outside, going into a weird machine state like we talked about on The Science of Insecurity. And that's kind of funny, isn't it? It's like the eye in the pyramid with the open question, what is it? All these hierarchical systems where they presuppose some God figure on the other side. Well, what if it's just the elite or somebody assuming that role, right? It's like we defer to that. We're like, oh yeah, it's going to be God at the top of the pyramid. But what if it isn't God? What if it's a person who assumes that role? This is kind of like the critique of liberalism. If we have this whole system where we chop the head off of it and we don't know who's in control, it's a big variable, then we can't solve it. And in the end, we're just a system without a head waiting, a chicken with its head cut off, or running around like a pyramid with the tip cut off, you know? That's my new term. We're not a chicken without the head. We're not running around like a chicken with its head cut off. We're running around like a pyramid whose tip's cut off. It's just a big question mark. Who's at the top? We don't know. Who's behind the curtain? Well, yeah, it's an insecure system designed so you don't know who's on the other side. You don't know who's in control. That's the whole design. And that could be assumed by someone. That's the critique of liberalism from this guy, nasty guy, Carl Schmitt. And I was so surprised when I heard his philosophy, I started agreeing with him. And then I realized he's a Nazi. It's like pulled out the rug from underneath you. On Philosophize This podcast, we covered that. All right, kids. Well, so that was the topic one from the Duncan Trussell podcast. And the second topic he covered was Shiva. Now, this is kind of interesting. They're saying that Shiva, the destroyer, is the creator and the destroyer of the worlds. Like, I know that from the Tao of Physics. Kaprov, I read that a couple times. The Tao of Physics. And they talk about Shiva as the creator and destroyer of the worlds. I just had that connection. Because Duncan's like, yeah, because the planet is going to eat you alive at some point. And it's like, oh, the planet's going to eat you alive. It's the fungus that's going to eat you.
Isn't the first step in the Bhagavad Gita, first you've got to deal with the fact you're going to die. That's number one. You have to deal with the fact everyone's being devoured by God. Start there. Like, we're all getting ground up in this fucking thing. I mean, this is the truth. We're being eaten and dissolved by a digestive tract that looks like a planet. That's real. And that's the way it is. Everything's being eaten. Everything you eat is being eaten. And you know that. So to me, that's the first step. Is like, oh yeah, you're definitely going to die. Like, you're not safe. You're definitely going to die. Could be in a FEMA camp. You could be dragged against a wall and shot in the head. And if that happens, I'll be screaming. I'll shit my pants and piss my pants and whimper. All my spiritual stuff will go out the window. But that's going to be 30 seconds or however long it takes for him to kill me. The rest of the time...
Oh, it'll be longer than that, Duncan. Don't worry.
Can please do it fast, oh, leader of the Illuminati. I don't want to suffer too long. But you know what I'm saying? It's like the finding the power to me means, you know...
Power lies in tearing apart human minds and putting them back together in a manner of your own choosing.
Sounds like fun, but the also sounds like annoying over it, like putting the mind back together and then you gotta pee and you come back and you can't remember where you were in the reassembly process. And then whoever you're doing it to, they're drooling. You put them back in the vat. Your supervisor's like, you didn't put his mind back together. Come on, what do you think? You're gonna get a bonus this week? To me, it's you know what I'm saying? It's like the individual has got to reconnect with the anarchic nature of reality.
So I made that connection, and then it's like, well, it's talking about Shiva, the destroyer, and the creator. Is Shiva not the fungus? And then I was talking to someone, presented that idea, and they're like, oh yeah, I saw Shiva when I took DMT. It's like, oh. DMT. Shiva. And then I started researching into the Sufis and the Sadhus. And the Sadhus are a mystic monk cult from India. And they have some kind of something, mana or something. In any case, there's like these questions if it's the fungus. Psilocybin or something. So it appears that there's mystical cults with mushroom usage or DMT type stuff in all different religions. So it looks like the fungus has expanded into all different levels. Now people are like, oh well, yeah, how could the fungus be doing this if it's an inanimate object that's just growing? Yeah, and how could the fungus be tricking the ants into cutting leaves to grow it? I mean, come on. Oh, it's just a coincidence. You know, I don't think so. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it's a slow process that the fungus is alive. Its thought process is just on the scale of millions of years, not on thousands of seconds. You know? So, and it could be the one at the top of the pyramid calling the shots for sometimes. We don't know. So I think we've gotten some of these things laid out a little bit, organized, I hope. Okay, we're going to have to cut out some of this silence here while I'm thinking. I was looking at my silence while editing yesterday. It's like, how many steps did I take to think? And what exactly are we talking about? Have we just reached a point here where we're like silent because we said everything? Well, I was just thinking about things. Okay, we've been away for a week. And I sure had the fungus growing in my kitchen, let me tell you. Mold and fungus. It's like, what's the difference? Well, they say the mold, was it the slime? Mold slimes are single cells. They can grow into these huge, huge bodies, and they have like all types of different forms they can take. It's kind of interesting. The morphisms, the morphologies. And I'm starting to think that biosemiotics could be some kind of woke system to reject Darwinism. But we're going to study it and get to the end of it. And it could be like, oh, well, we don't want politics in our system. But maybe they're injecting politics into the system by saying they don't want the politics. Like the guy said, he doesn't want my podcast because it's personal political. And maybe he is also being personal and political by saying that this is his value judgment. Awesome list for conspiracy type stuff. See, I don't want to get too political on GitHub because I know they're going to come after me and shut me down. I just know they will. They're going to be like, oh, you're being too successful and too against our community guidelines. It's time that we shut you down. You've come to our attention. I can't hold it against the podcast 2.0 guys to want to have simple tags and not support the full features of our RDF. And I started to research into these different namespaces yesterday. And I thought, well, okay, there's these different validators for validating different namespaces. So that contains some code. So I'm wondering if we can codify the different namespaces using rules, express those rules in kind of like an OWL, and then provide a mapping onto the syntax of RSS. So it's like a generic description or mapping structure for dissolving these different namespaces. That's kind of what I was hoping. It's like, why do you have to write it in Python? Like the whole thing. Why can't we make it more abstract? And I suppose we can keep the same interfaces in Python and just generate them out of the ontology. It's like the same exact getter and putter functions. The fields for the user of the code. Now we're going to go through the dark woods, over the bridge, through the woods. At least all the snow's gone. It all melted. So, to go back to some politics, it appears... appears that there's now 12 senators who will object. And they want to present all types of evidence to the court, to the congressman. And people are already deciding ahead of time how they're going to vote. It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be real interesting what happens. This is a good civics lessons, kid. Everything so far seems to be on the up and up. And as you see, there's absolutely no, there's nothing wrong with the aristocrats doing all of these things and obstructing and obfuscating, because they're doing it for the good of you, you see. And the Republicans also do it for your good. So these are the power structures that have been, I guess, accepted by the people for a long time. So it's precedent, really. It's precedented that it's preceded. It has been done and uncontested that the people in power will basically lie to you and cheat and steal as long as they have it enough under control and you can't show it as a problem quickly enough, and you have the media on your control and the big tech. And that's really what I'm personally scared of. So the Telegram founder says that it's going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars a year to run Telegram. And he's considering putting advertising in on big public channels. As a way of supporting. But we know how that's going to go. Oh, is your channel is not brand safe. Well, what if you're just a useless eater? A useless eater. And I guess that's the risk that we run. Be targeted for not being productive enough in selling advertising for McDonald's. And there we go. So in the end, if you're not selling McDonald's, then you're useless. Or I guess if you're a great artist, I guess you have to be just more amazing, huh? You can't just be mediocre and marginal. And that's why I've decided to improve constantly on this podcast, because I don't want to be marginalized forever. I want to make a product that you will like to listen to. Is that a freaking deer? How majestic. It's just standing there in the light. It's got this little baby deer. Hey, deer. You look like lunch. Yeah. Oh, there's another deer. Baby deer and mama deer. Hey, deer. Just sitting there looking at me. Those are some big animals. I haven't started talking about the deer spirit yet, have I? Spirit animals, or the spirits of the animals. Okay, let's take a break. Let's check our messages. see what's up with the chicken jar, and make a disposition decision. End of segment one. 4,000 steps. All right, so I was just listening to a lady explain what is biosemiotics, and she's talking about neuropathways that neural habits and neural pathways where you have a habitual behavior and neurons that fire together wire together, so you have chains of thought that fire together to create networks or paths, and these paths or selectors, I guess, get reinforced through repeated usage, and I guess those are communicated later somehow and built in other people as memes. We'll get to that. She also talks about cells signaling other cells, and those signals can then be sent internally to organelles or inside the cell, or they can create signals outside the cell.
So what actually caused the anthill to trigger the thought mole in my mind? What constrained that response? Well, the fact that it had caused it before, and before that, and before that. The anthill kept triggering mole in my mind because it was a self-reinforcing habit. Neurons that fire together wire together. And nothing had happened to break that habit. Sign readings that are wrong are still sign readings. In fact, dysfunctional sign readings show better how signs actually work and come to be. For my text-oriented sign readers, here is a four-slide definition. I define sign action as the process wherein an individual self, like a cell or an organism, encounters a sign vehicle and responds to it, transduces it, interprets it, in such a way that there is a reinforcing effect on that response toward that sign. Such sign readings lead to semiotic habits. A self can misread a sign vehicle due to a coincidental physical similarity to a familiar sign vehicle. We call this an icon. Or a self can misread a sign vehicle due to an association with an object, a reinforcing effect, that is coincidentally nearby, and we call this an index. It points to something. These misreadings can lead to novel adaptive behavior if a new reinforcing effect results. The semiotic tendencies that constrain readings and misreadings constitute selfhood, and therefore automative and adaptive behaviors are self-created. Taken together, the two aspects of sign reading, habits and changes of habit, directionality and originality, produce the intentionality of an individual self. Groups of selves or cells experiencing more or less the same conditions send and receive signals such that waves of coordinated activity emerge, and through the same mechanisms, coordinated wave behavior can switch to a different regime. This illustration shows that similar signaling molecules and relay molecules might lead to different cellular responses with the same semiotic infrastructure that has evolved by means of natural selection. Living systems have agency to the extent that there is flexibility in all information processing capabilities, immune responses, sensing external and internal conditions, regulating internal operations. Semiosis is virtually identical to intentionality. We need to remember that the nodes in any communication network aren't passive pass-through points. They each have the potential to interpret or to misinterpret information. This potential is a measurement of how adaptable and how creative the individual may be. Living systems sometimes have reliable, predictable behavior that is almost machine-like, especially when they are carrying out vital functions. And they can also be adaptive when the environment changes, especially when they are carrying out vital functions. As Don Favreau has shown in the introduction to his book, Essential Readings in Biosemiotics, Signs have not always been associated exclusively with the human mind, words, symbols, or culture. A more general understanding of a sign as a mechanism in all biological systemic processes had been advanced by Aristotle and some medieval philosophers. Unfortunately, at the very beginning of the modern era, Descartes, who didn't know about this work, convinced the majority of the Western world that the road to inquiry necessarily forked into mind and matter. With the introduction of information concepts into biology, terms such as signal and code suddenly appeared like strange specters in chemistry and physics. Biosemioticians believe that the sign concept spontaneously crossed the Cartesian barrier between mind and matter as a natural consequence of the self-correcting nature of scientific practice. It was needed.
To other cells. So this is all very interesting. Let's see what else she has to say. Very interesting. So she's saying Descartes said there's the mind and there's the body and they're completely separate. And biosemiotics says that the symbol or the sign crosses. I'm just thinking about like bees and animals that trick each other, like flowers, and insects that look like flowers, or insects that look like trees. So there's all types of imitation and trickery happening in the insect world and the plant world, in terms of signs. And they're saying that, she's saying that, living systems can be repetitive and dependable if life depends on them, but living systems can also be adaptable if life depends on them. So that living systems have agency, they're able to change and adapt. And I think that's really an important part of what we're talking about here. She's also talking about language as being built up on top of cellular activity. That's some pretty good stuff, this biosemiotics. I like it a lot. Self-reinforcing systems, neural pathways, messengers, and well, either the fungus is building these receptors in us, or attacking them, or co-developing. I mean, how is it that these magic mushrooms produce DMT? I mean, how is that even possible? Like, they co-developed with humans, and maybe, well, dogs dream, right? And cows, I suppose, dream, like everything dreams, so like this DMT stuff probably exists in other animals. And the fungus could be co-developing with other animals as well. Okay, well, she's saying that the signal is not just a chemical reaction when one cell emits a chemical or message and the other cell reacts to it. She's saying it's a signal if it serves the survival function. If these deer think that I can't see them. You think I can't see you, don't you? Good morning, deer. Looks like the same four deer, no? Six? Looks like a different squad. The signal is not a chemical reaction between cells because, first of all, the cell has agency. It can decide to ignore or modify or adapt to the message. That's why people can be allergic to some things that aren't real. And it looks like that's what's happening with this whole COVID thing.
A molecule passed between cells is called a signal. If it sets off a response that is ultimately good for both cells and or the body they're part of. So a signal has a function for survival and maintenance. And the cells have been evolved by natural selection to process signals. A chemical in the body that does not have this kind of effect is not a signal. Signals relay information about the state of affairs in one cell to another, so that the receiving cell can respond appropriately, usually by producing additional chemical signals to send to other parts within that cell or to send to other cells. Cells, after all, have to work together in a coordinated way, and this is more or less the essence of a living system.
Being trained, they're setting up neural pathways. On the No Agenda show yesterday, they said that biologists have requested live examples of COVID, and also that the COVID was patented by the CDC. That they can't get any live samples of it. They looked at it with electron microscope. They said it was influenza. And they're actually suing the CDC and saying that the COVID doesn't exist. It's like, what if people are being trained to somehow self-destruct or just panic? What if they're being tortured, really, over this whole thing? I mean, it's being reinforced through media and messaging. I mean, what if it's a giant psyop? Like, how do we know? How do we trust? And how can we know and trust if we know there's a precedent for lying to us? And that we're always going to be in a state of unknowing.
Here's how I want you to understand what a sign is. Think of each step in this pathway as a sign for, or a means to an end, of the ultimate reinforcing effect. If we define biosemiosis in this way, it has real explanatory power. It explains why people believe things that aren't true. It explains why we can have allergic reactions to neutral things. It explains how life first emerged. It explains how meaningless things can acquire new meanings. It explains how creativity is possible. It explains why AI fails compared to biological intelligence when it comes to adapting to context.
Well, I think we have to take a step back and say, what do we need to know? And what affects us directly? If people want you to wear a mask, then wear a mask. I'm just going to wrap my safety vest around my face like I did before for my mask. Or maybe I'll go shopping later. I wanted to actually eat less. I have some food left in the freezer. And we got lots of eggs. And you know, those chickens were a great investment. They're just producing eggs. But it looks like they're holding out on me. They must have found a new place to lay. I'm going to have to search everything for the chicken eggs. So it's interesting, if you have this DMT molecule, this dream molecule, this imagination molecule, and you send that to the brain. And you know, when I was walking along in the woods and I said, well, what if there was some way we could resonate with these fungus? Well, what if we can generate through mental imagery or through language, we can generate thoughts that trigger DMT. And that DMT would then trigger imagination response internally, memories or thoughts or visions. Isn't that the instruction codes that we talked about through the beauty, the art? Like the instructions for drawing something, the instructions for imagining something, painting on the canvas of the mind, the Gödel fractal. And the neural pathways are kind of like the pathways through the fractal, like parameters on what part of it to look at. And let's go further and say that this fractal function is bigger than the Mandelbrot, okay? Let's just say that the holofractal is a much bigger thing that you can look at. So you have the mind, you have the Cartesian system, I guess. The Cartesian system, I think, therefore I am, points on the plane. These are just simplified two-dimensional versions of the fractal. Three-dimensional ways to index it, like a simple space, but we can subdivide that space and we can also change it over time to create movement. So we can index different parts of the world and think about them, different places, I guess, create some kind of clairvoyance or imagination, and that could be part of the fractal, just parameters, messages to the imagination function. Like, present this idea, present this key idea, present this key idea, present this key idea, and then trigger the fractal, trigger the DMT. And then the DMT imagination function will take those inputs and then generate a response based on the context that it's called in, maybe some latent parameters, maybe some specific, something that's specific to the person. This is all very interesting. We're getting into some serious laboratory of the mind stuff here. Psychonaut. Traveler in the psychotic, in the psyche, in the mind, in the spirit, in the ghost. It's like, put on your helmet, kids. We're going for a trip. It's kind of funny how we can axiomatize axioms, create basic functions, or postulate basic functions on this. So yeah, I think this is a worthwhile podcast. A little rambling, but we're getting some stuff knocked out here. Getting some ideas pushed out. So, do androids dream of electric sheep? Do deer dream of my crunchy vegetables in the garden? That's quite some pee that the deer is making. That's a lot of pee. Okay, let's see what else the lady has to say. Okay, so she's talking about if the object of a discussion is an abstract or internal thing, how do you explain what it is?
If you talk about the objects of science as if they are abstract things, generalizations, they are ideas in the mind of the interpreter. And this is not helpful because it still leaves the question of explaining what ideas actually are. This understanding of Peirce's triadic sign relation does not work, and this becomes most apparent when you are trying to understand cellular signaling.
Well, I am working on that. And I'm saying, if we're discussing an internal thing, then for some of them it's easy. It's like the thing that is created when you present these symbols to the mind in association with something that triggers a DMT type reaction or an imagination reaction. When you present a draw instruction, or you instruct the mind to imagine or look at something, that is the basic meaning, a basic internal meaning. An internal display function. That's just one possible outcome that we're going to just represent. And say, through experimentation, we can see that it does exist. Now, we'd have to do a study, maybe. Translate. We can do it through imagery. And look for things that everyone will understand. Okay. But I do see, speaking about reinforcement, I do see that there is something that could be considered structural racism or structural oppression or structural fighting. And maybe we are also guilty of that on this podcast in promoting the idea of the fight of the meme and the fight of the gene. Maybe all of that is just some form of structuralism, like this idea of eternal conflict and survival of the fittest. Maybe that itself is a very political idea. Darwinism. Neo-Darwinism, as she said, and maybe it's not exactly correct. So we're going to have to be open in our study of biosemiotics. And maybe, again, the rejection of Darwinism is also political. So we're going to have to study all of this. Oh, my phone's beeping. Let's see what's happening. Just this idea of superior, inferior, conquest, winner and loser, one meme fighting for supremacy over other meme. I mean, these concepts, I think, should be considered, but we can't hold them in absolute truth. Obviously. And they might just be reinforcing some neural pathways of conflict. Let's put it that way. And this is kind of where we're getting into postmodern theory, I guess. Neo-Marxism. Then maybe the softening of the mind. We're going to see where this is all going. But we don't know where it's going. We don't know where it's going. And I think it's important to recognize that you can't always know where something is going before you embark on the bus, especially if it's crafted by someone. And maybe we'll have to deconstruct things on the way and try and interpret them and understand them in our perspective. And then maybe we have to change how we view things and take a step back. So a message that I tried to understand is this eschatology. So let's look up what eschatology means. Yes, eschatology, a science of last things, or judgment. So the judgment card, number 20, that connects the sphere of, what is it, Hod, 8, and Earth, Malkuth, and the Tarot system, and the Kabbalah, the judgment day, with the corpses rising from the grave to be resurrected when the final coming of Christ comes. Eschatology. So that's a powerful concept. Now, we talked about that in terms of the fungus. And we said that in the fungus mythos that we're creating, that when the universe is destroyed, somehow things that are encoded into the fungus will be carried forth into the next generation somehow. And maybe it's not the universe being destroyed, maybe it's the universe being cloned, right? Maybe the universe is cloning itself along the quantum or parallel worlds. That the universe is actually going along different pathways. And it's not actually dying. And maybe the fungus is copying information from one planet to another. So maybe there's miniature events. And maybe one universe is actually sending out spores to spawn other universes before it dies in a larger, if we said there's a substrate or a universe of universes, if all of these universes just exist as some fungus growing on a tree, some spores in the woods, and each of those spores, each of those fungus cells contains the entire different universe. That we're actually inside of the fungus cell. That's what we perceive to be our universe. I mean, that's a fucking trip. So for this whole namespace, we're going to have to let them go and do the simple representations. And we're going to propose an alternative representation or the extractor function, like we talked about. So yeah, I think we've gotten to, we've added some new context onto our, we've added some new context into our theory, our myth of the fungus. So that's good. That's real good. Look at these deer. These could be the four deer that I saw before. This is a different group. They're coming from that direction. Good morning, dearie. Dearie deer. I wonder if they recognize the word deer. They like co-evolve with humans. I guess the Dunkin' Donuts guy, they didn't like that I was buying these. I really think they didn't like the fact that I was buying the dozen donuts. They're like, do you want cream cheese with that? It's like, no, I don't want cream cheese with that, buddy. Just give me the bagels. I want a dozen bagels. They always get upset with that. Yeah, it's funny, this microphone peaks out sometimes when it gets too loud. I can see it on the waveform. So I've started to recognize the waveform of cars. And I definitely think we can create some plugins for Audacity to do that. Also, these vibrations. I mean, I was looking at the waveform. I guess we could adjust it somehow. So there's got to be some tools that we can use or build. Like, this is the symbol of a car. This is the symbol of a truck. This is what a footstep sounds like. This is what a cough sounds like. This is what my coffee sounds like. We've got different events happening. We can recognize those. I'm sure. Okay, kids. Now it's time for our obligatory McDonald's advertising. So I'll tell you a little story about McDonald's. There's a McDonald's here, and if you try and order from the window or walk through the drive-thru, they yell at you and they won't serve you. I tried this multiple times. And then I tried to install the app, because that's the only way you could order. And I was so offended by the size of the app and the amount of permissions it wanted that I uninstalled it. Today, considering that I'm at war with Dunkin' Donuts, I installed the app. I used my email with a plus attached to it, so you can say email plus McDonald's sucks, for example, at gmail.com. You can add in any number of pluses you want. So I signed up with a password that also was offensive to McDonald's. They want an uppercase and a number, and less than 12 characters. So I did all of that. And then I ordered my coffee for $1, and I got a free sandwich, which was pretty good. And there's a mobile pickup, so you can just order it, and then they bring it out to you. And that works. So, and they even have a drive-through and mobile pickup area. So it looks like good morning. So it looks like there is a, let me move this microphone up. Sorry about the noise here, kids. I just want to tell this little story. It looks like there's a damn, I forgot what I was going to say. But in any case, we're going to have to edit this a little bit. Edit. Cut. I got to scream so I can recognize the edit mark on my voice pattern. Yeah, the whole purpose of this podcast is to advertise the McDonald's app. I guess we're going to install the Dunkin' app next. All right. Thanks for listening. Okay. Oh, one more thing I wanted to mention is I was driving home from Pennsylvania on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and I saw an Amtrak bus. And I said, what is that? Because, you know, in Germany, I saw buses all the time, Kosovo, Europe, but in America, never. Only big trucks, but never bus fulls of people. And then behind it, I saw a pickup truck flying four flags, and I said, wait a second, that must be the Trump MAGA caravan. So it looks like a lot of people are descending on Washington, D.C., because if they're actually taking buses, that means, you know, that means something. Because Americans, I never see them take buses. I never see Amtrak buses. So that's kind of interesting.